Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Welcome to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here with Mac Burns, Clatsop County Historical Society.
And a whole lot of turkey.
There's
still a whole lot of turkey inside of me.
Of course. It was fabulous, I'm sure.
Small family.
Same here. Right. Enjoyed it. That's what the holiday is all about, right?
Kind of a blessing not to have like tons of family around.
My family's all around, so I'm not going to comment on that, Mac.
Right. All right. So the third big show, we're excited.
It is. This is going to be our best show
ever.
Yeah.
Now, we had a fabulous guest last week.
We did. Marianne Myers. Isn't she just a dream to have on a radio program?
She really is pretty amazing.
It's like she's done it before.
Yeah, a couple of times.
Maybe on the same station.
So we don't want to just overwhelm our vast listening audience with a fabulous guest every week.
Right. So we usually switch it up every other week.
So this is just you and me.
It is.
But it's going to be fabulous.
Talking history. Learning a couple new things about each other and this day in history and our region.
What do we learn about me already?
Well, turkey. You're filled with turkey.
See, I thought we decided already didn't we ask last week who was turkey versus ham or something like that?
Correct.
We decided we were all turkey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's Thanksgiving.
That's right. Although I did make a plug for doing a historical Thanksgiving, including like lobster and eel and mussels and oysters,
right.
Things like that.
Yes.
But nobody seems to be on board with that. Neither am I, to be honest. Slice the Thanksgiving eel.
Yeah.
Okay. So we get right to the big history highlights of the day.
Sure. Let's do it.
And, you know, I always say that you can win bar trivia or arguments with your friends and family. The other thing you can do with this, if you're ever on Jeopardy.
There you go.
These might be the final Jeopardy answers, which also reminds me that I have not commented on how sad I am about Alex Trebek.
Yes. Definitely very tragic, but very beloved, too. And it just seemed like this last year it was great. It was great what he was able to bring to his colleagues.
Yeah.
To the viewers.
And what amazes me is somebody who mispronounces almost every other word. I'm just always stunned that he can pronounce all this stuff. And I know he has to practice.
Right.
It's still very impressive.
It's always good to be surrounded by good editors.
I had a goal once. I wanted to be on Jeopardy and not ring in once. But the entire time, like very obviously physically, like be clicking the clicker after somebody else had rung in. So it would appear that I knew every answer, but I was just too slow on the ringer.
That's a great strategy.
And I could tell everybody, man, I knew everything. I knew every single answer. I couldn't get that buzzer to work right. Anyway, all right. Our vast listening audience is thinking I'm a moron now. All right. On this day in 1847. The Native Americans kill Washington State pioneers Marcus and Narcissa Whitman and 12 others in Walla Walla, Oregon. The Whitman Massacre.
Okay.
And I actually, the only reason I included this one is because when we first started doing Talking Tombstones like a million years ago, I had a lot of people that thought it was like a haunted house thing. And they would call and say, is it spooky for kids? And I'd say, well, it might bore them to death. I don't know. But we actually spooked out one kid one year. It was probably like a little girl. It was like 5 or 6 because we did a survivor of the Whitman Massacre.
Oh, wow.
And we don't write scripts for the actors. We give them the basic information. And it was a young woman that was portraying this person. And she talked about, and then they ripped out my parents' heart in front of me and held it up. And this poor little girl's eyes just got really big. And the parents said, okay, maybe this isn't for the kid.
And this is why I haven't brought my daughter.
That's right.
True stories, people. True.
And that's why I always remember the Whitman Massacre. I'd never heard of it before then. All right. Wow. Got two massacres. 1864, the Sand Creek Massacre. The peaceful Southern Cheyenne and Arapaho Native Americans are massacred by a band of Colonel John Shivington's Colorado Volunteers at Sand Creek, Colorado, in June of 1864. They had been given their own territory because they were friendly. Hmm. And then because
massacred.
We decided we wanted the territory, they decided they would go and wipe them out.
Yes.
Quite horrible what so many Native Americans had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a miracle that their culture is still here, and that unfortunately the two local Chinook and the Clatsop Nahalem are not recognized. They should be, because they're still here.
Right.
They're our neighbors. Yeah. They're our neighbors, our friends. Their culture still exists. It's quite a tragedy. All right. 1890. I put this one in just for you. 1890, the first U.S. Army, U.S. Navy football game.
All right.
Because you like football.
Yes.
So who do you think won?
Ooh, Army versus Navy.
Army, Navy, 1890.
Oh, maybe Navy. Let's go Navy.
Navy, 24, Army, 0. At West Point, no less.
Wow.
The Navy came in and kicked Army's butt at West Point.
When you're on a ship, you know.
1942, coffee rationing begins.
Ooh.
Wow, yes. Suddenly the war got real.
Also very dear to my heart.
1972, co-founder of Atari, Nolan Bushnell, releases Pong, the first commercially successful video game in Andy Capp's Tavern in Sunnyvale, California.
In a tavern.
In a tavern.
That's interesting.
Now, do you know Pong at all? Do you remember Pong?
I don't. I was not a video gamer.
It was like really rudimentary, but it was like a line. Two lines that could move up and down on either side of the screen. And you batted this little dot, like tennis, back and forth.
Or ping pong.
Or ping pong, yes. But the reason I remember Pong, I had a buddy of mine that ran the Kansas State Museum. And they did an 1980s exhibit in 1995. And they had huge debates about, is it too soon? You know, it's just 5 years ago.
Right.
And we lived through this. And they debated and debated, and then they decided to go ahead and do the exhibit. And of course, because it's a state museum, it was a huge exhibit. And the director said, I wasn't sure we'd done the right thing until about a week into the exhibit opening. And he was walking through the exhibit, and they had put Pong behind glass, but you could still move the little paddles and basically play a game of Pong through the glass. And he said there were two little boys just looking at it, not even touching it. One about 7 or 6 and the other like 4 or 5. And they're just staring gape-mouthed at this exhibit. And the younger one says, what's that? And the older one says, that's what video games were like in the old days.
6 years ago. Yeah. 5 years ago.
Pong.
That's great.
So it's actually earlier than I thought, 72.
Okay.
Let's see, 2001, George Harrison from the Beatles dies.
Okay.
He's my favorite Beatle.
Yeah. They're all fabulous.
You're not going to pick a favorite?
John Lennon.
Is John your favorite?
If I'd had to choose.
Okay. And then our history highlight of the day, the thing I think had the most impact on history, 1947. The United Nations votes for partition of Palestine and the creation of an independent Jewish state.
Wow.
And everybody lived happily ever after, and we've had no problems since.
Right. Oh, history.
But creation of Israel, that's huge.
Yep, that is huge. So. Yep, history highlight.
Okay, and so today I thought we would do something kind of fun.
Okay.
We're going to talk about milk.
I love it. We have dairy farms near us.
We do, and it used to be huge, but it's still actually a vibrant industry.
It is.
And a lot of times, you know, people think, well, we're out here in Clatsop County on the coast, and things that happen nationally don't really impact us that much. But this is a great example that we're always kind of part of a bigger history and a bigger picture.
Yeah.
So we call this the Dairy Wars.
Okay. In pioneer days, each family tried to keep one or more cows to provide milk for the family. Milking was a time-consuming twice-daily chore. As villages grew, some families kept enough cows to sell the extra milk they had to those people who no longer kept them. Some farmers later hauled milk to town to sell to regular customers. They learned that by cooperating with each other, they might be able to buy the feed together, and by buying it in larger amounts, get it at a discount, and that way make a bigger profit. And by pooling some of their profits, they could build a place where they could process and store the milk, also developing a more efficient means of distributing it to the public. Not all of the cooperatives, and the result was a mix of privately operated dairies, cooperatives, and distributors. Not all joined. The dairy business came under stress as a result of the worsening economy with stock market collapse on October 29th, 1929. Many businesses failed. Competition between milk suppliers became more intense. Disagreement focused on the retail price of milk. If all dairies in an area agreed to sell milk at a high price enough to keep them all in business, there was no problem. If, however, some of the dairies, cooperatives, or distributors sold the milk for less than the others, they could corner most of the business and run the other dealers out of business.
Ooh.
Never happened before, right?
Never happened.
Some did choose this strategy. They might do this by paying their workers less and cutting corners on standards of cleanliness, and at the same time claim that they were helping those who could not afford to buy milk for their families at the higher prices. This was the situation all across the country and here in Clatsop County and the coast. If even one dairy or cooperative in an area lowered the price of milk they sold, the others would follow. In Astoria, it was the Young's Bay Dairy that set off the dairy war.
Ooh, it sounds very scary.
I feel like we need background music.
We do. Shall I try and do some?
Sure.
Dun, dun, dun.
The Young's Bay Dairy Cooperative was incorporated in March 1931 by a communist organization.
Dun, dun, dun.
That same year, they purchased a lot where they put up two buildings. The one in front was a dairy building, and the behind it was a meeting place they called Columbia Hall. This was formerly the location of the Finnish Socialist Hall, which was built in 1911 and burned down in a fire in 1923 that some members suspected might be arson. The Motel 6, a few doors west of Sumi Hall, now sits at this location. On September 28, 1932, the Evening Astorian Budget reported on the front page.
Young's Bay Dairy won't raise price. The Young's Bay Cooperative Dairy decided at a stockholders' meeting last night to maintain the present milk price of 5 cents per quart, according to information today from the manager of the organization. Consideration of the matter came up with a request from the Astoria Milk Producers Association that the Young's Bay Co-op join in the raise to 8 cents per quart, effective October 1st. Failure of the Young's Bay organization to join other producers and distributors, will prevent any raise of the price of milk for the present. Efforts to raise the price of milk to 8 cents per quart were organized several weeks ago in the forming of the Astoria Milk Producers Association. The organization includes 18 of the principal dairymen and distributors of Astoria and the vicinity. After conferences with other distributors and producers, it was announced that all but the Young's Bay Co-op had agreed to a raise in price. It was stated, however, the raise would not be made unless the Young's Bay Co-op join the raise.
Tempers were rising all over the country in the dispute over the price of dairy products. On September 29, 1932, the Astoria newspaper reported the bombing of the Delicious Ice Cream and Dairy Company in Tacoma. Dynamite sticks placed in the machine room of the plant exploded without doing serious damage, but two men at work in the front part of the plant were also not injured. The company had been selling milk for 2 cents a quart less than the price set by the larger distributors. A week later, bombs wrecked a new creamery of the Burlington Cooperative Pure Milk Association in Burlington, Wisconsin. Five masked men kidnapped the watchman, releasing him 2 miles out of town, after they set two bombs on both floors of the building. The watchman finally made it back to town to find people searching the wreckage for his body. A month later, local problems came to the fore in the front page article again on October 27th, 1932.
Attempts to raise milk's price fizzle. Attempts on the part of Astoria dealers and producers to raise the price of retail milk here from 5 cents a quart to 8 cents a quart seem to be at the same stalemate, which has existed for some time. Tuesday night, the Astoria Milk Producers Association met, and the members signed an agreement to raise the price to 8 cents a quart. But several of the larger concerns qualified their agreement with the statement that such action would depend on the Young's Bay Dairy Co-op, which first dropped the price to 5 cents. Other dealers are apparently in line with the same action, so the agreement apparently will have no effect unless the Young's Bay group meet. Last night, the Young's Bay Co-op held a consumers' meeting at Sumi Hall, where those present voted heartily in favor of retaining the 5 cent a quart price. Reports from outside communities indicate the prices in Warrenton and Seaside are running from 8 cents to 10 cents a quart. Dairymen claim they are losing at the present price, and businessmen are claiming that the low milk prices are vitally affecting business from the dairy districts brought to Astoria.
On October 31st, milk dealers in Astoria announced that they were raising the price of a quart of milk to 8 cents. Those selling milk cheaper did it by a sacrifice in quality, and that rather than sell milk of such type to their patrons, they will make the 8 cent change. It was stated that they knew some would keep the 5 cent charge, but others who had charged 5 cents were likely to go along with the increase. The next day, an article in the newspaper again claimed that those who sold milk for 5 cents were selling impure milk.
The distributor stated that it was impossible to produce the type of product necessary for retail trade at the extremely low price that has prevailed for the past 2 months. The agreement was reached by all producers affiliated with the New Producers Association, and it is reported that they are all producers with modern equipment and maintain the necessary conditions. The statement that we get what we pay for is just as true of dairy products as it is of other commodities.
On November 18th, front page news of the Evening Astorian Budget reported,
retail milk price here down again. Cutthroat tactics are charged against some dealers. With the exception of 3 or 4 producer distributors, all retailers of fresh milk in Astoria have again dropped the price of milk to 5 cents per quart. A survey revealed today, in most cases, the attempted raise to 8 cents per quart lasted only a few weeks. Responsibility for the raise is asserted to be cutthroat tactics of large distributors who refused to raise at the same time the others did. Producers who raised assert that the Consumers Cooperative Dairy failed to abide by a verbal agreement not to solicit new customers on the basis of the raise. The Consumers Co-op failed to raise but had assertedly agreed not to use this as a basis for soliciting new customers. The Youngs Bay Co-op also refused to join in the raise. The Larson Dairy and Sunflower Dairy went back to the 5 cent price when distributors who had not raised began to cut into their business through active solicitation. Other producer distributors also dropped, but a small group is maintaining the 8 cent price.
The struggle over setting the price of milk caught everyone's attention with the headline in the December 1st, 1932 Evening Astorian Budget newspaper.
Youngs Bay Cooperative's plant is wrecked by bomb. Milk war angle is probed. Class warfare, says communists. Windows shattered in nearby buildings. Folks all over the city hear noise. No clues discovered by police. A mysterious explosion, assertedly caused by a bomb set off by enemies, wrecked the boiler house of the Youngs Bay Cooperative Dairy Plant at 240 Taylor last night at 10:50 o'clock, tore the side off of the rear part of the Seaboard Transport Company. Transfer. Let's pause. Take a breath. There's a bomb going off.
There is.
it's very discombobulating. They tore the side off of the rear part of the Seaboard Transfer Company headquarters and broke windows in adjoining buildings. No arrests have been made today, and authorities were apparently without a real clue to the identity of the person setting off the explosion. The explosion was apparently caused by blasting powder placed on the dirt floor just east of the boiler, but the method of setting it off could not be determined, Chief of Police John Acton indicated today after an extensive investigation. So strong was the explosion that any evidence was destroyed, and only the fact that the explosive had not been better confined prevented the whole structure from being destroyed. Heard over city. The explosion was heard all over town, and persons attending the Finnish Open Forum Club meeting in Sumi Hall nearby were reported to have been thrown into a near panic. Windows of the Karahavara boarding house, say that one 5 times fast, east of the dairy, the Union Steam Baths, and the Safeway grocery store across the street were broken by the force of the explosion. The fact that the Youngs Bay Cooperative had been active in keeping the price of milk at 5 cents per quart was believed by some to have brought about the bombing by dairymen, disgruntled because of the low price. Officials of the dairy indicated that they leaned to this theory. The local secretary of the International Labor Defense Council charged that the bombing was a piece of class warfare.
District Attorney F.P. Lineweber this morning received the following telegram in regard to the Youngs Bay Cooperative Dairy Plant bombing last night. International Labor Defense League demands grand jury investigation of the fascist terror bombings of the Young Bay Cooperative Dairy. Demand arrest and conviction of the perpetrators. We pledge the support of militant workers and farmers. Signed, Emil Linden. The message was sent from Portland. The district attorney said at noon today that he had not yet been acquainted with more than a cursory sketch of the facts in the case and that the matter relative to any suspects or clues to the perpetrators had not been presented to him. No meeting last night. Emmanuel Picamosa, local communist leader and employee of the dairy, told police that educational meetings of the communists had been held in the building almost every Wednesday night, but that last night the meeting was not held because of the one in Sumi Hall. The damage of the explosion was estimated to be $2,200. So strong was the blast that the sheet iron structure which housed the boiler and which was about 12 by 20 feet in extent but was twisted bits of scattered for a distance of more than 300 feet. Steam pipes were broken and twisted, oil pipes were tangled and broken, and the boiler itself was lifted in the air and set down several feet lower at one end. Iron window frames were crumpled like so much cardboard.
According to the newspaper, one theory of the explosion was that it was an inside job, as word was that the employees had not been paid because of financial difficulties of the dairy. There was no insurance carried on the building, so the rumor was discounted. The dairy said that it would rebuild and continue delivery of milk. The next day, investigators had a better view of the damage. Fortunately, the bombing did not result in a fire. Workmen discovered 47 sticks of 30% DuPont blasting powder. That's really the best thing to use. 30% DuPont blasting powder of a type used in the logging industry. They were found in a gunny sack. The fuse leading from the dynamite had burned for a time, then went off when it struck a kink that was made when it was laid. If this dynamite had gone off, the main building would have been wrecked, as well as the building where the boiler was.
The date had been stamped on each stick, revealing that the dynamite was purchased early in 1932. The next day, District Attorney Frank P. Lennon Weber announced that the grand jury would investigate the bombing. Officials of the dairy will be invited to present any evidence which they have on the matter, and authorities investigating the bombing will be heard. City and state police continue to try to identify people who might have been involved, but were unsuccessful. The dairy was able to continue production and still sold milk for 5 cents a quart. It was sometime in the 1950s when it was no longer listed in the city directories.
Isn't that just amazing? I mean, you hear about these kinds of things and you think, okay, on the East Coast or Midwest or someplace, not here.
Right.
I mean, they're bombing the rival milk producer.
And there's no way that no one knew who it was.
Yes.
I mean, I can't even imagine that. I mean, if it happened today, you would know. Correct. I like, too, that in the newspaper, the chief of police actually says what you needed to do to get the whole building to fall down.
Yes.
It's like,
I just want to try again.
Sir, maybe you shouldn't release those details.
And I'm not going to make fun of the 5 cents versus 8 cents, because that's a lot of money back then, especially for how much they're selling. But what amazes me is Seaside and Warrington.
I pulled that sheet aside. That's amazing. I mean, double, right?
Yeah.
Double the cost. But that they also refer to it as outside the community.
Yes. See, and that's the tough thing for us today, because we just get in our car and 20 minutes later we're in Seaside or we're down in Cannon Beach. And for them, like the Flavelle family, they actually had a vacation home in Seaside on the prom.
Right.
And people always go, what? And for them, it was a 5-hour trip.
Sure.
And, you know, this is certainly later than the Flavelles are going down to Seaside, but it's still not a quick and easy trip.
Right. Not as many bridges, not as many easy roads.
You got to plan it out. But it still amazes me, the close proximity and the price difference.
But double the price.
You would think they would all get on board.
If they're going to bomb over 3 cents, but in Warrington they were charging 10 cents.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
So shall we take a little break?
Sounds good.
All right. You've got Alana and Mac on An Adventure in History, and we will be right back.
November 14th, 1904. Star Theater. Tonight, feature act, Sylvester, Jones, and Pringle, Kings of Minstrelsy, Paul LaCroix, a clever comedy juggler, Irene Caber, a novelty artist, The Three Kellys, singers, dancers, and comedians, Edward Scott, Astoria's favorite baritone, singing Way Down in Old Indiana, Edison's Projectoscope, depicting recent events by Life Motion Pictures, Matinee Daily at 2:45 p.m., admission, 10 cents, any seat.
November 8th, 1894, COP's celebrated NF bottle beer is getting a tremendous run in this city and surrounding country. Only $1.25 per dozen, and it's the best in the Northwest. If you don't believe it, order a case and try it.
Welcome back to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila, and I'm here today with Mac Burns for our best show ever.
You know, I was struck by milk. Can we make milk interesting?
We can.
But history makes milk interesting.
It does. Milk does a body good.
And we have some amazing pictures of the bomb damaged dairy as well. And, you know, when you drive past, you'll look at that hotel, the location now, and you'll be like, oh my gosh, this is like right down in downtown almost.
So many social issues in just this one, one essay, because, I mean, you're talking about strategy, you're talking about socialism, communism, and all
right here.
Right here.
On the ghost.
And it's still happening.
But we got a little bit of time. Shall we do some local This Day in History?
I love it.
Tick,
yes.
Tick, 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 tick. All right. Let's see. November 29th, 1895. Lightning strikes the Trullinger Electric Light Plant, burning out one of the transformers and entailing a loss of several hundred dollars. At the same time the sharp electric display in the heavens occurred, the Western Union telegraph wires went down, and as if that wasn't enough, the messenger boy fell off the table. Now, my people might think some kid sitting on the table. The messenger boy is actually like the name of the device.
Oh, interesting. I was picturing. Right. Well, also on November 29th, 1935, the Peckin Fireworks Company, largest wholesale dealers in the fireworks in the United States, is going to make its main headquarters right here in Astoria. According to an announcement by Harold Coe, head of the firm, its new centralized Astoria operations will begin about January 1st with salesmen going out from the city. Astoria is better located as a distributing point for the company, Mr. Coe said. Did you happen to catch fireworks this year?
I did not. I did not see any fireworks this
year. They were canceled because we weren't going to have large events. In the city of Astoria off.
I know, surprise.
They still had them.
I know.
Yeah, but it was a surprise. Yes, yeah. It was sort of like a gift to people that were here.
But I wasn't even looking, so I never saw it. I heard about it the next day.
Yes. Like, and I live in Hammond, so we can't say it, but still.
All right, so this one is kind of huge, and this one I could do like an hour and a half on if I needed to. November 30th, 1813, the British sailing ship Raccoon sailed up the Pacific coast, arriving yesterday some 20 miles below the mouth of the Columbia River. They had encountered bad weather for days before, but on this day, the ocean was calm. They dropped anchor at Cape Lookout. On this day, November 30th, 1813, they weighed anchor, sending two boats, Gig and Jolly Boat, ahead to sound the large bar at the river mouth. It was a fine day with smooth water, and the Raccoon easily passed over the bar to anchor at Baker's Bay. The ship was here to capture Astoria.
Ooh.
This is the War of 1812, finally coming home.
Oh, okay. So that is going to be in an episode.
There's a huge,
that's
a
deep
story.
Tease.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's an amazing story.
Stay tuned for that adventure in history. December 1st, 1923, Astorians will get a chance to look over the balloon tires, which have been making a sensation in automotive circles in a couple weeks when the Lovell Auto Company will have a Buick demonstrator with four-wheel brakes and the balloon tires. It is claimed for tires of this type that they give greater ease of riding, longer life, and greater traction.
Nice. We talked about Lovell.
Yes.
So it all comes together. All right. December 2nd, 1924. It is reported that after the next meeting of the city commission, the city of Astoria will be without an ordinance to license bar rooms and drinking shops. The ordinance passed in 1877 will be repealed along with several dozen others. Another ordinance which will be repealed was designated to prevent swine from running at large in the city. I hate when the pigs are just running around. Yet another was to suppress bawdy houses. I love bawdy houses. Others, which will be swept away by the repealing ordinance, are instruments defining the duties of the town marshal, authorizing the appointment of a town attorney, fixing the poundmaster's salary and that of the town physician, and regulating the burial of the dead and providing for punishment of fast riding and driving of horses in the city.
Man, that was a busy meeting. And this was a great show. I'm so glad to be back with you and had a great Thanksgiving and very thankful to be with you again here on KMUN.
And
I love it.
Next week will be December already.
That's great.
Wow. Yep. All right. We'll go make some history. Thanks for listening. We will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.